050-660-7910 and talk to them about your family health needs now. Visit equityhealthinsurance.com for more information. Equity Health Insurance, here for you.
Thanks for staying with us here on Newsnight. And Evans, we've been talking about this dry spell here on Newsnight for some time now. 8 regions were hit by it, a number of farmers affected. We've been waiting for that briefing from the Agric Ministry. It finally happened today. It was actually an interministerial briefing today that we got at the Information Ministry. And you've been speaking to the Agric Ministry on this particular issue. But there are some interventions that you want walk us through on this.
Indeed, and there are preliminary estimates talk about 500,000 farmers directly affected already, an estimated 10.4 billion cedis revenue already lost. And they're estimating that more farmers, up to 1 million farmers, will be hit by the time this is all done, when the dry spell is over and the rain set in. That, in estimate, would hit our pockets, 2.2 billion cedis, right?
Okay.
And that's quite significant. And so the Agric Minister, who was speaking to us a short while ago, has been detailing the emergency measures you're putting in place to try and help farmers affected. Not only farmers affected, but also they're anticipating that we're going to have a situation of food shortages later this year. We'll hear him pretty shortly talking about that. But to avoid that, or to mitigate that, a few things you're doing. Mm-hmm. They're tapping into the ECOWAS Green Zone to import maize and rice to shore up the country's food reserves. Right now, it's something they're activating. They've also decided to provide most vulnerable farmers 1,000 cedis per hectare, as well as some food grants. We'll hear more from the Peasant Farmers Association. They have some concerns already about this. We also know that fertilizers are a major part of this, and the government is providing some help with this also.
Okay.
Now, as we've heard already, the government, the president to be very specific, has directed the finance minister to raise some 8 billion cedis to deal with the crisis as far as bringing in the buffers concerned. And that, as you know, as George was just intimating there, is something we had not planned for. $500 million is what it's going to cost us to do this. And where are we going to find the money? The Agric Minister talks about the challenge and something that they are currently looking into, cutting some of the budget to raise the funding for this. But most importantly is a fear that this would have a devastating impact on our food security, but also food shortages. Now, I asked the Agric Minister a short while ago when they are anticipating that the food shortages will take full effect in terms of its impact, when that will be felt. This is what he says.
The situation is a terrible one. We have put in the systems, we have announced the measures, and we are going to work with our partners, our stakeholders, to ensure that we are delivering the relief to the farmers and also restore their crop life.
And we've also heard about the ban you've placed tonight on rice, maize, soya beans in terms of export. How are you enforcing this?
Well, as of last week, the security agencies have been put on extremely high alert to ensure that no grains, as we know it, is leaving our borders. So that has indeed started, and the defense minister was there as part of the briefing to ensure the nation that the ban has been placed, they will enforce it to ensure that our grains are protected for the benefit of Ghanaians.
Based on your estimations, I heard you talk about food shortage. How soon do you expect all of us to start feeling that impact?
So the transitional zone harvest and the northern harvest should come in around the 20th of September. In fact, the early those who planted early, we should have been seeing their grains on the market in Tamale by now. Clearly, there are no grains on the market now, but we should have the full impact by the end of September. And that is why we are putting in the interventions and now to ensure that by September we have enough grains on the market to ensure that we don't have food shortages or distortions on our food price systems.
Well, so that's the Agric Minister.
And you go
Brian
to the market, listen to Brian Champo, the Agric Minister, say expect the shortages by end of September. That might strike you differently.
Yeah. Did he say what we are supposed to do in the interim, though?
In the interim is the measures that you're putting in place.
The ban?
One, exactly, including the ban on the export of grains. Mainly, we are talking about maize, rice, soya beans. And as he's just been talking about that, the defense minister is on top of this in terms of the deployment of the Ghana Armed Forces and men in uniform across the borders to enforce this. Listen to Dominic Nittle, who's a defense minister.
So I want to assure you through to the nation that the security agencies are immediately activating their network to ensure that the ban on cereals, which has been listed, are regularly enforced so that nobody will take even a single grain out. We have the approved routes and the unapproved routes. About 80% to 90% of all exports pass through the approved routes. And so I just want to assure you that already we have a lot of security personnel. From today, we'll ensure that no tracked loads of grains will leave Ghana across to anywhere. The unapproved routes, we will also get all the security agencies to ensure that even the 20% does not leave our nation. It helps us as well because we have a big problem, which is the terrorist attacks all over across the other side. So if the ban is put in place, it's enabling us to deploy actively along the borders. It will help. But security is as good as the citizens themselves. So please take advantage of, if you see something, say something, and help the security agencies as well. You yourself are security people yourselves. So as long as you see something that has escaped the eagle eye of the security, please let us know. We'll act well. We are deploying all across the borders, particularly the northern part. We are also to the east and the south. And so we'll ask citizens to support the security agencies, that if for some reason there is some unapproved route or approved route, or somebody sees something that is going on that is not nice, please let us know so that we can act appropriately. It's for the good of all of us that we should not make our citizens suffer. If we have something that is unexpected and Parliament itself is even acting, then all of us have a role to play. It's not the fault of any government that rain has not come for the last 2 months. And so all of us as citizens must ensure that we work together. It happens. And so if we work together, it's natural disaster. We should be able to overcome. So we want to assure you that we'll actively ensure that the plan government has put in place or the decision government has put in place, we would enforce it to the latter. Thank you very much.
And that there is the Defence Minister, Dominic Nittle, talking about enforcement of the ban. And earlier we were speaking to Bismarck Owusu-Nortese, the President of the Peasant Farmers Association. They are raising concerns already about the ban that has been imposed because it may lead to farmers being shortchanged when it comes to food prices, because if you can't export, they believe it may place a limit on how much they can charge for their foods and lead to a situation where the farmers will not get what they have invested in the growing of these crops. He joins us on the line still with us. And thank you for staying on. That is the defense minister talking there. They are deploying men across the borders to enforce this, but you have concerns about what this will mean for the prices which you sell the crops that you've harvested on your farms. But this is a moment of national crisis. Personal gain definitely must give way for the collective good, is it not?
Yeah, Evans, just a quick response to the Honorable Minister of Defense. I don't think that if the right measures are in place, any farmer will take delight in exporting their produce. Why would a farmer be interested in exporting a produce when he or she knows that locally he or she can sell at a good price and recover the investment? No farmer will do that. So you don't need to put in security measures. You don't need to put in guards at the various border points. If you are very sure and certain that the measures that you are putting in place, they are comprehensive enough. Because if you put in place this ban, But farmers are getting value for the produce that they produced. They are not getting shortchanged. They are getting good value locally. I'm not sure any farmer will be interested in exporting their items. So sometimes we fail, and then we put in place measures to punish those who are victims of our policy failure. And that's what is happening.
But as part of the interventions, though, at least Evans has made it clear that indeed we are not in ordinary times. But government has decided also to provide most vulnerable farmers up to 1,000 cedis per hectare. Is that not good enough?
Yeah, I think that that also one of the recommendations we call for. So it's not something that we have a problem with. The only challenge is that we fear it might be politicized since we are in an election period and might be an avenue for vote buying. We will therefore want to see a very comprehensive and transparent model that the ministry intends to use to do this distribution. Already, we are having issues with how inputs under the PFJ are being distributed, where politicians have been involved in the process and are giving these fertilizers and seeds to their cronies and their food soldiers. So what is the guarantee that this new grant that the ministry intends to give to the farmers who have suffered is going to be transparent, and then the actual farmers who had their crops destroyed are going to benefit?
I'm wondering where this fear is stemming from. Really, you don't trust that government would do the needful, as they say they would do. This particular question came out at the press conference, and the minister clarified that it would not be done on political lines.
Well, we under the PFJ 2.0, in fact, I can give you the document to look at it. There is no mention of any involvement of any politically exposed person. But what are we witnessing now? We are witnessing MPs and DCs distributing fertilizers. So what is the guarantee that even with this one, which is just an oral assurance, we should take it seriously than what is written in the policy document? So we don't have that assurance. The only way that we can have this thing work is if we have the ministry bringing on board all stakeholders, because I heard him mention that they're bringing on board stakeholders. The challenge is that why didn't you do it even before you announced these policies? Because we will provide other alternatives and other approaches to improve upon it. So what is the guarantee that because he has said it, it's going to be done that way? That's something that we cannot trust him based on his word.
But overall, you can conclude
and then
on that.
The support on the input supply. That's also another concern that we have. That, you know, when it comes to agricultural issues in Ghana, and when it comes to the local level implementation, we all know it's the district agric directors who are supposed to lead in this process. But somehow, when these interventions are rolled out, they are sidestepped and other people take over. So until we see a very comprehensive model, a comprehensive system or mechanism by the ministry that is ensuring the transparent allocation of these inputs, I think we're very cautious about how we commend the ministry in that regard.
Well, Mr. Notte, wrapping up on this overall, in terms of the measures that government has announced in terms of mitigating the impact of this particular dry spell, which he says will kick in at the end of September, would you say it would actually address the concerns that you had in terms of that looming food shortage that you talked about?
Well, I think that when you look at the interventions put in place, I think it partly addresses some of the issues that you raised, and I think that it will make an impact. As to whether the impact will be huge to avert the possible food crisis that we highlighted, that's something that I really doubt. Because if you look at the level of devastation, if you look at the high cost of input, if you look at the fact that we are still going to rely on the rains anyway, because even as we are providing the inputs, the new seeds, the new fertilizers, we'll still be relying on the rains anyway. So assuming there's another rain failure, then we are back to square one.
Well, that's the president of the Peasant Farmers Association Evans, Mr. Notte, on these measures that the government has put in place that was announced earlier today.
And you know that the government is hoping to raise some $500 million mm-hmm. to try and deal with this crisis right now. But also, the fundamental question is whether the interventions rolled out and announced today are enough to mitigate the impact and avert that food shortage. He talks about that they expect now to hit by the end of September. I want to bring in the public relations of the Agric Economist, who is joining us right now with thoughts on this particular matter. Robert Edu, Professor Robert Edu, is Agric Economist at the KNUST. Prof, thanks for your time here on Newsnight. The ministry has laid out a raft of measures to try and mitigate the impact. Do you see these as effective to avert that crisis, that food shortage that they anticipate may hit by the end of September?
Thank you very much, Evans, and good evening to your listeners. I think that the measures look quite okay, except that they can be strengthened. For example, when you say you want to ban export of grains, they need to maybe support it with a certain purchasing regime that offers prices that are more competitive than the prices in our neighboring countries. For example, if they are selling a bag of maize at a certain price in Ivory Coast, and then the price that is offered in Ghana is far lower, farmers and business people are price sensitive, so they will be tempted to send it to the neighboring country. And we know that some of our people at the borders can be compromised. It doesn't matter how strong the security network is. And so I think that in addition to the border arrangement, they should also have a food purchasing regime where government itself is now going to offer very competitive prices so that all those who have produced those grains can sell to government. Government then stores them in our strategic warehouses, and then government begins to release them onto the market as and when we see shortages on the market. That way, we can manage the price hikes better. Even locally, if you leave it like that, we can have private people who will go into the marketplace and buy in bulk and hoard. And then it will create a certain artificial shortage, which can come in to exacerbate the situation that we are having on our hands now. And if we are not careful, the food will be in the country, but people will be hoarding them. And then they wait when prices are extremely high. That is when they will release them onto the market and then exact some huge rent from us. So I think that government has to strengthen that. Number two, I also think that the compensation that government is proposing for farmers who have suffered some losses appears to be a bit low. Because if you say you are giving 1,000 Ghana cedis to a typical farmer for just a hectare, now, if you are doing 1 acre, I think as far back as 2020, doing an acre, farmers were spending 1,200 Ghana cedis to produce maize on an acre. And in 2024, some farmers are spending as high as 6,000 Ghana cedis to produce on an acre. So if you extrapolate it to a hectare and you say that somebody has produced on a hectare and is recording losses and you want to compensate this person by just 1,000 Ghana cedis, I think it's on the lower side. They need to sit down with the farmer associations and see if they can push this one up a bit. But I want to support the point that was made, I don't know whether by the peasant farmers, the compensation has to be supported with some data. By now, the MIS unit of the District Department of Agriculture should be on the field already. They know the farmers who cultivated within the year. They should have some rough estimate of the losses that each and every farmer has suffered. And then that should inform the compensation that they are going to give to people. Otherwise, if you make it just blanket, then they fear that people who are not even farmers could find their way onto the list is possible. So I think that data should inform the compensation arrangement going forward.
Prof, thank you very much. That there is Professor Robert Adu, the Greek economist with the KNUST, and many of you now are joining us with your thoughts on this unfolding story with the impending food security challenge.
On 055-111-1997, also on all our social media platforms, you can hit us with that. This one says, food shortages and a ban on export for a government that recently implemented planting for food and jobs. Interesting. Well, for some, in Mataiku sent that one. We have Wolanyo in Akwetia says, how can we live in Ghana and our food is not enough, but yet still some Ghanaians will be exporting some of the food out of Ghana to cause famine in the country. This is purely inhumane and unpatriotic. Lincoln in Akwetiman says, what happened to the planting for food and jobs? One village, one dam, which we're told will be the game changer. And this one also from Jones in La says, with all the huge amounts of money for planting for food and jobs, one and two, we are still not made sufficient. When we say this, government is a scam. Okay. Lip service, he says, is what we are paying. And maybe I'll take a final one from Jones at Duboy in La. He says, unlike JM, who was straight to the point with regards to the various questions. Okay, so we'll get to that story. It's the media encounter between Dr. Mahmoud Balmia and media in this country last night. That's what Jones is referring to. Some of your comments that you've sent in so far. Well, it's time for us to do our floods of trauma. And now, at this point, and we are heading to Adabraka Sahara. Is that your area?
That's where I was raised. That's not where I was born, but that's where I grew up. And that day is a very important area. In the Greater Accra Resilient and Integrated Project. You know that hailed as a country's salvation from flooding remains largely unfulfilled due to severe financial constraints as the Works and Housing Ministry struggles to complete projects. Some residents in flood-prone areas like Adabraka Sahara are taking matters into their own hands to protect their families. Mamisi Nyamiche Thompson has more in our latest episode of Floods of Trauma.
The June 3 flood disaster claimed over 150 lives, leaving behind deep scars that time has yet to heal. Today, when dark clouds gather and the first drops of rain begin to fall, the people of Odona Sahara are gripped by fear. They remember all too well the devastation that followed the rains 9 years ago.
So I was in the house. The school, when the blast, you know, the blast was close to where I was at the time.
65-year-old Theophilus Teiko, a retired teacher, narrowly escaped death that night. He took shelter at his school before the floods took over. After agonizing hours of wait, he returned to a home wrecked beyond recognition.
When I came home in the morning from the school compound, the level to enter the house was on my chest.
It was a tragedy that exposed the vulnerabilities of our infrastructure. Government pledged to undertake some flood mitigation measures to prevent future disasters under the Greater Accra Resilient and Integrated Development Project, GARID. In all, it will take government $6 billion to permanently resolve the canker. However, consistent flow of funding is a major hurdle.
The National Flood Control Program itself has only done three rounds, 2018, 2020, and 2023. And it's very, very limited. If you take the Greater Accra region, for example, for all the drainage works, the concrete drainage works that need to be done, only 2% of it has been done, 2%. And so that tells you that we don't have enough well-structured channels to get water out.
The Works and Housing Minister, Kojo Opon-Krumah, confirmed receiving $150 million as top-up to the previous $200 million for GARID, but work on various projects will take time to complete.
What the fund will do is to help mop in some more resources beyond even the seed money that government put in, just about 1.5 million CDC. Some of our development partners, we've got some of the green funds around the world that are interested in climate resilience, interventions. So our objective is to crowd in some more resources to complement what government gives us on a yearly basis. Last year, I think 98 million CDs, that was 2023. The flood control program had about 98 million CDs that was made available to add up to a bit of the drainage works across the country. And in our industry, 98 million cities can do so much. I mean, it can do very, very little. We need to mobilize some more resources to be able to tackle the situation head on.
At Odona, Sahara, the drain constructed immediately after the disaster has not made much difference. Apart from the irresponsible waste disposal, residents complain that the drain was too narrow to facilitate the flow of water. They are living in a state of constant anxiety whenever it rains.
We don't feel safe, especially when it is the night, when people are sleeping and stuff. There was a time there was a tenant in our house. He died through that because it was in the night. That's how bad the flood is. That is it. Though the drainage doesn't do anything about at all.
Rainy, you said, oh, it will not come. It will not come. Before you realize it has started coming to the house, you are there, you have to run outside. I called them when the rain is falling. I called them, they said it has come to window level.
Theophilus has constructed what he describes as a safe house. It's his way of keeping the people he cares about safe, at least until proper interventions are made.
So far, we have managed. That's all I can say. Because if you are in a struggle, by all means, you have to find your out. Me myself.
How many people can this space take?
It can take as much as 10 persons.
10 people. Oh, okay.
Dredging of the Odor River Basin began in March after the project stalled in 2022. Western Housing Minister Kojo Obonkoma, on a tour of the site, hoped that the effort will mitigate the flooding in surrounding areas. But residents say the impact is yet to be felt.
The Odor is choked. There's so much filth in it. Whenever it rains, it overflows its banks. Even the dredging machines are no longer here, except for one, but it can't do the job.
9 years on, the nightmare is far from over. Residents are hoping that the Garrett interventions will reach them soon enough. Mami Isi Nyamiche Thompson for Joy News.
Beautiful story there told by my colleague Mamusi. It's our Flats of Trauma series. Another edition comes your way same time. Let's do business now, George. We're focusing on Greg and the dry spell and the impact on the economy.
And the finance minister has been talking about how this could also have some serious impact on the economy with growth and inflation affected badly. We'll be getting you more details on that one. A national petroleum authority modifies the license requirement to help check number of oil marketing firms in the country. The business news on Newsnight is brought to you by MTN Business. Welcome to the new world of business.
The other day, I visited Kweku at his spunky new office to congratulate him on opening his business. And man, was I impressed. The business is just moving quick. The sales, customers, everything is just working seamlessly. The secret? He said,
it's MTN Business Broadband. In this fast-paced environment, we need fast and reliable internet to support all business types. No laggy online meetings, great download and upload speeds, impeccable business management systems, all inclusive. I mean, you can have it all.
Shout! I signed on immediately.
To enable your business stay ahead and stay connected, make sure you're signed on to the best internet made just for businesses. MTN Business Broadband. Sign up today on broadband.mtn.com.gh. And manage your account on my MTN app. Call 0244-308-111 for more information. We are good together everywhere you go.
Are you ready to turn your dreams into reality? Don't just dream it, own it with a loan from Fidelity Bank. Dreaming of a new home? Own it with Fidelity Mortgage Loan. Dreaming of smelling the scent of a brand new tear rubber car? Own it with Fidelity Auto Loan. Dreaming of getting the latest phone, TV, fridge, furniture, laptop or gaming console? Own it with Fidelity Consumer Asset Finance. Dreaming of expanding your business? Make it a reality with our business loan. Fidelity Bank is offering flexible loans to businesses, salaried workers and the self-employed at a competitive rate. Dial 0800 003355 or visit visit any of our branches nationwide today to turn your dream into reality with a Fidelity Bank loan. Terms and conditions apply. Fidelity Bank. Believe with us.
Fidelity. If I believe with us. Fidelity. Oh, if I know I'm on your side. Fidelity.
Kingdom Books and Stationery Limited's Back to School promotion is here with us once again. From August to September this year, Kingdom Books and Stationery Limited is giving a generous 10 to 20% discount on all school items like textbooks, pens, pencils, erasers, exercise books, and much more across all our branches in Accra, Tema, Kumasi, Takrade, Winneba, and Cape Coast. Parents, teachers, and students, please hurry while stocks last. For more information, call us on 0506-487-557 or 0302-764-209 or via email at info@kingdomgh.com. You can also visit our website www.kingdomstoreonline.com. Kingdom Books, where quality and affordability are both assured. Terms and conditions apply.
We have a new leader in town, OBRNT. Amafo, me don't want to be maybe mamu more charcoal for whiter teeth.
More charcoal.
Not only that, maybe mamu lemon.
More lemon.
Zinc for fresher breath.
More zinc.
And fluoride for stronger teeth.
Introducing the new President Charcoal packed with more power with a combination of charcoal and lemon for naturally whiter teeth. Grab yours now. This advert is FDA approved.
The luckiest
*712#
Luck is everywhere for everyone, yeah. The luckiest
*712#.
Luck is everywhere for everyone, yeah.
Doctors,
nurses,
barbers,
drivers,
bouncers,
friends,
teachers,
bankers.
Go.
The luckiest
*712#.
Luck is everywhere for everyone. Yeah. The luckiest
*712#.
Luck is everywhere for everyone. Yeah.
Doctors,
nurses,
barbers,
drivers,
bouncers,
friends,
teachers,
bankers.
*712#.
You could be the luckiest.
You're welcome back to Business on Newsnight. Now, Finance Minister Dr. Mohamed Amin Adam is warning of serious impact on the economy as a result of the dry spell situation in the northern part of Ghana. The minister is worried about how this could affect inflation going forward. Dr. Mohamed Amin Adam has been speaking at a media briefing in Accra. He's also worried about how this development could affect growth going forward.
Our growth trajectory is in danger. Economic growth is in danger. We also look at it from the perspective of pricing. We have seen for some time now inflation trending down, and our expectation is that we end the year with an inflation rate of 15%. I am very optimistic that we will make significant progress. But we also know that our inflation basket is dominated by food inflation. When you see food shortage and therefore the effect on prices, you should expect that inflation will respond, and will respond in the way that you do not want.
Finance Minister Dr. Mohamed Amin Adam. Meanwhile, government is looking at raising 8 billion Ghana cedis to support the country's food security situation. According to the minister, this will be a combination of funds from the contingency fund, budget realignment, and the country's development partners. In related development, the Agric Minister, Brian Champon, has been giving details on support for the affected farmers.
Government has decided to provide financial support amounting to 1,000 Ghana cedis per hectare to the most vulnerable among these farmers as partial cover for their investment. Government will also provide affected vulnerable farmers with some food grant to enable them meet their minimum nutritional requirement. input support, seed replanting assistance. For farmers whose crops have failed due to the lack of rain, we will be launching a replanting support program. This will include the provision of fast maturing seeds that can still be planted within the remaining window of the season. Farmers who need to replant will also be provided with grant fertilizers to ensure that they can still achieve a reasonable yield. Planting for Food and Jobs is focused on input credit, but for the affected farmers who have lost their investment.
And that is a Greek minister, Brian Hichampo. Let's still stay on the sector because economist Professor Peter Korte has described the planned support for the agri sector by the Development Bank Ghana as a good move. Now, the bank is planning to set aside more than 1 billion Ghana cedis from next year to support the sector. Professor Peter Korte believes that this could go a long way to deal with challenges facing the sector.
It's very ambitious, but that is the way to go because agri is the backbone of our country. And if what he's saying, we are trying to push more into agriculture, I think I support that. ADB is doing the same. In a couple of years back, it was giving about 10% of his portfolio to agri. Now it's doing over 22-23%. And the medium-term target is to get to 50%. So the Development Bank is also pushing that. That is good. I would urge them to target irrigation, you know, get into large-scale irrigation for farmers as well, because we cannot continue to depend on the weather and expect that when we provide credit to agriculture, it will do well and repay some of the loans. So, yes, good to target medium, small-scale farming, but also earmark some funds to promote irrigated agriculture.
And that is economist Professor Peter Korte. The National Petroleum Authority says it has reviewed licensing requirements to help deal with the number of marketing firms operating in the country. Some industry players have raised concerns about the number of firms looking at the size of the economy. A communications manager at the National Petroleum Authority, Mohammed Kudus, says they are working on these issues.
There have been modification of the requirements as we move along, and the environment as it is today actually accepts the structure that we are operating within. As and when we feel that there's something that we need to do, we'll look at it again. If you followed, you realize that there have been a review in the mandatory distance between two filling stations, just as it were to make use of the times and be able to move along with the changing situation. So as and when we feel that there's a certain aspect of our rule that we need to tweak, we will do that, because we ought to be mindful of the changing times and act to reflect same. So we are reviewing our processes, and we believe that the environment within which they are operating today is good enough, even though one will still have a challenge or two. I take, for example, the period within which they are supposed to take the levies margins and account for sale.
Mohammed Abdul Kudus is the communications manager at the National Petroleum Authority. And that's all for business on Newsnight.
And George, thank you very much. So live your Newsnight is on Joy 99.7 FM. And victims of the Akosombo Dam spillage are preparing to sue government over the lack of action to resettle and compensate victims of the spillage that happened last year. MPs in the communities affected by the spillage are up in arms against the interministerial committee set up by the president for doing just that, alleviating the suffering. The committee is chaired by a chief of staff with a number of other top ministers as members were tasked to consider resettlement and compensation for the victims. But nearly 1 year after the disaster, MPs for the area say neither them nor their community leaders have been contacted by committee members. Speaking during a stakeholder hearing on the disaster, the MPs expressed their anger about the state of affairs.
You heard government set up a 30-member committee. We are the interministerial committee. To be very honest with you, we are very disappointed that that committee has not met us even once. I mean, a lot of the members, we are in parliament with them. I would have thought that even if it's parliament, we can meet here. We can even meet at the cafeteria, even over coffee. that, oh, share data with us or tell us what is happening, you know. Not one meeting. Not so. We don't know if it was just maybe an announcement for the public for some cosmetic reason, but we don't know. And the chiefs, time without number. They will even call us. You are in parliament with them. When is the committee coming? And we can provide answers.
Played a very major role. The chiefs brought all of us together. I mean, the MPs and the DCs, they also formed a 13-member committee in anticipation of the arrival of the 13-member ministerial committee so that we could brief them about all that was going on. But until up to date, we have never cited that committee in our district.
Well, so let's bring in Parliamentary Affairs Correspondent Kweku Asante. He sat through that hearing today, joins us in studio. Kweku, let's talk about the claim particularly made by Okudzeto Ablakwa that they are going to sue in the coming days.
Well, yes, this is a comment that Ablakwa has made some time back, and they say that in the next few weeks, they're actually going to file a class action suit against the government because they believe government is being negligent in dealing with their concerns. They say they're speaking among themselves. In the next few days, if government does not come up with a compensation and settlement plan, they're going to court.
We have met, and we don't want this to be hidden from you. We have said that if government does not do something about compensation, we have spoken to our lawyers, we are headed to court because it is our right. So we don't want to hide this from you. If in the next few weeks, because next month will be the first anniversary, so we have met and said that if by the first anniversary we don't get strong indication, we don't see actually the first group of people receiving compensation, then we have no choice but to resort to the courts for class action for all the victims to receive compensation. Because as Togbe said, it's like we've been forgotten, totally abandoned.
Well, so at that level, but we'll get to hear from him shortly. But first, in fact, let's hear from Okudzeto Ablakwa.
That's why you play it. Calm down.
Honorable Chair, government made available an amount of 200 million to start the process. We've sent a memo to cabinet about various options, how to proceed in resolving this issue. In all, we projected about 600 million cedis to do the project. But currently we have 200 million cedis. So if you are to do it in a year, it means that we need 600 million to be released for the resettlement process. If it's going to be 2 years, then it means that we need additional 100 million to make it four, sorry, additional 200 to make it four, so that we can fast track it and do it in 2 years. If it's to be 3 years more, then we need 200 million every year too.
So that's the chief director of the Works and Housing Ministry, I beg your pardon. So he was giving updates on what exactly they would need for the resettlement?
Yes, and that is Reverend Stephen Yawose, the chief director of the ministry, providing some updates. 200 million so far released by the government. They say they would need about 400 million to be able to totally resettle all the persons affected in all the various councils in December.
Let's talk a bit more about this HADOT committee and the work that they'll be doing. Do we know how long it's going to take? Where exactly are we?
Well, the Speaker of Parliament did give them 1 month, starting the 1st of August to the end of the month. They have already gone to the constituencies to do some familiarization visit, and they are back in Accra now to do stakeholder consultation. Today, they met all the MPs, the DCs, all the other persons from the affected communities, and as far as they are concerned, they are just about to conclude their work, and we do not expect them to hold any public hearing. They'll put together their report. We are not aware if They are going to take the report on the 3rd of September when the House reconvenes for that emergency sitting, or they wait for the House to reconvene either at the end of October or early November.
Okay, that's Parliamentary Affairs Correspondent Kweku Asante there giving us updates on the committee's work so far. Let's do sports. We lost Sven Goran Eriksson today, but really, this evening, what's up?
Well, the Ghana Football Association is holding their 30th Ordinary Congress ahead of the start of the new season. It's happening at the Ghana Mansoor Center of Excellence. It started today and is expected to, among the issues that we're looking forward to being addressed is a new broadcast partner for the Ghana Premier League following the exit of Star Times. Reports have suggested that GTV Sports Plus might come into the picture, but we understand it's going to be top of the agenda at the Congress, which will officially start tomorrow. Victor Chitamaklo has been on the grounds and filed this report on what's been happening today.
The leadership of the Ghana Football Association and the 18 Premier League clubs are expected to clarify whether or not the league will begin on the 6th of September, as previously communicated. The GFA is also expected to brief members on its efforts to secure a broadcast partner for the league, as well as its annual financial statements for the past year and approval of its budgets for the new year. The GFA is also expected to give an update on its investment into the Ghana Mansoor Center of Excellence at Pram to give it a facelift.
That's Victor Achutamaklo, and I'll bring you more update in our bulletins on that FA Congress happening. Well, over the weekend, Nsoatreman Chairman advanced to the next stage of the CAF Confederations Cup after defeating Elect Sport in Cameroon. Then on Sunday, FC Samatex, the Ghana Premier League champions, also defeated Victoria United 2-0 on aggregate to advance to the next stage of the competition. Well, their head coach, Amadou Nouridine, is already looking forward to their game in the next round.
I think that we need to grow. We need to be tactically awake a little more. We have certain things that we shouldn't be doing at this stage. But I think that it's a young team, and so we will grow into maturity as the game progresses. We anticipate a very tough side because Raja is an experienced team. They are experienced in the champions, but we will give them a match of their lives.
Reading Amadou there. Even that's it for sports.
Thank you very much, Musbao, with the latest from the world of sports. Now, after months of uncertainty and complaints, President Akufo-Addo today broke grounds for the commencement of the expansion works on the Accra-Tema motorway.
Well, the first phase of the project, which is expected to cost about $380 million, will bring huge relief to motorists who have described the pothole-ridden stretch as a death trap. And I used it this morning, and many of you are currently on that road heading home, possibly speaking at the sword-cutting ceremony to mark the commencement of the project. The Minister of Finance, Dr. Mohamed Amin Adam, indicated that the rehabilitation, which involves expanding the 19.5-kilometer road into a 10-lane expressway, will cost an estimated $660 million.
And the time has come to renew and expand this motorway to meet the needs of a modern and rapidly developing Ghana. The total cost of the entire project scope of work is $660 million, with the first section alone requiring $380 million. Through the strategic leadership of our government and the Ghana Infrastructure Investment Fund, we have secured $380 million in equity and viability gap funding.
Well, we can hear from the president, Akufo-Addo, indicating that the project, which is a private-public partnership, has been awarded to a Ghanaian contractor.
I'm particularly pleased to note that the contractor for the first phase of this project is Messrs. Maripoma Enterprise Limited, a wholly owned Ghanaian company. This is a testament to the capacity, capability, and ingenuity of our domestic enterprises, and I'm confident that they will deliver this project to the highest standards.
So that's President Akufo-Addo there. Now let's focus on last night's encounter. It was been a busy weekend from the NDC's manifesto launch in Winneba. Last night, also Sunday, we had a media encounter with the Vice President and leader of the NPP, Dr. Mahmood Bawumia. Among the issues that came up, you know that the issue about the fundamentals are weak, the exchange rate will expose you, and amongst others, teachers are suffering, doctors are suffering. These questions came up, plus the issue about corruption and, of course, the anti-LGBTQ bill, the proper human sexual family values bill. There's no proper anymore. So these are questions, a wide range of questions that were posed to the flag bearer, Dr. Mahmood Bawumia. We'll focus also on the press freedom. But let's start with Faustina Safo's highlights of this media engagement.
Head of our political desk at Draw News posed a critical question concerning the controversial anti-LGBTQ bill.
As president, will you sign the promotion of Ghanaian sexual rights and family values bill?
The bill is before Supreme Court, and once it's out of the Supreme Court and they declare it as constitutional, I believe that signing is automatic. No ifs and no buts.
The media engagement then took a historical turn, revisiting comments made by the flag bearer during his 2020 campaign.
Mr. Vice President, you will remember this quote: if the fundamentals are weak, the exchange rate will expose you.
If the fundamentals are weak, the exchange rate will expose you, which is a truism. It was true then, and it's still true today. When we came into office during the first term before we hit COVID between 2017 and 2019, you saw the fundamentals pretty much strengthening by all accounts. The biggest shock for the economy came in 2022. So you're looking at a situation this year. Why is the depreciation lower? Because the fundamentals have strengthened. The fiscal deficit is under 5%. We are running a primary surplus. The reserves are increasing. And the gold for oil program is helping.
Highlights of last night's encounter. And we can take maybe a few highlights also from the manifesto launch. Maxwell Agbagba was there.
It was a day of speeches, policies and plans for the future that will be implemented if the NDC is elected. The NDC flag bearer John Mahama criticized the President Akufo-Addo-led government, describing it as a failure.
This MPP administration has been the biggest political scam that has been pulled on Ghanaians since our independence in 1957.
Key among the promises in the NDC manifesto is the implementation of the 24-hour economy to create jobs, the establishment of a women's development bank, the implementation of the big push, which the NDC flag bearer John Mahama says will invest $10 billion to drive growth and lift the size of the economy if he wins.
John Mahama, waya, 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 waya.
The NDC flag bearer John Mahama vowed to hit the ground running in his first 120 days in office.
And that's Maxo Agbagba's report, and we are getting ready for the big one. The Join News National Dialogue on Defending Media Freedom is just 3 days away, and we've been hearing commitment from many, and the hashtag Defend Media Freedom GH is still on. You can join the discussion as we prepare for the Join News National Dialogue this Thursday. Now, I know you've been meeting some of our big speakers for the day.
Yes. Tell us more. And we met the IGP today. He's agreed to be part and deliver a statement to us all. It's very important, as you know, going into the elections to have that partnership, and he's been very kind to accept to be there. So we're expecting to see him. We have other dignitaries also going to come. We cannot have an election without a media. As you know, everybody doing from the SIF all the way to when the EC declares will be glued to their sets, to their radios, to the social media handles. And so imagine all of us decide on the SIF to go on strike. No, what will happen? Imagine it for a second. That is why you need to be at our event this Thursday. It's all because we are leading up to that. And we've been battered sometimes, bruised, biting, and assaulted. And we want to have a conversation.
With the pain.
Exactly. Yes, we were talking about media freedom, but also responsibility. So we're bringing all stakeholders, both home and abroad, together for that big conversation on Thursday. Is at 4 p.m.
I look forward to that. And that's how we wrap up tonight's
edition. It's at the Nat Hall, if you're wondering.
Yes, here in Accra. And we wrap up Newsnight for now. There's more when you log on to myjoyonline.com. It's a Monday, and Ananza Paul has, that's my opinion. What's our topic?
Resetting or upgrading?
Okay.
So we had, it's an interesting
we
one.
We had resetting. Okay. All right. We'll stay for that. I am MFR Paul.
My name is Evan Spencer.